listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 235 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where today we are going to be discussing the five things that can crush the souls of musicians and how to avoid them. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I'm pretty good. My soul hasn't been crushed this week, which is good. I'm editing a music video. I'm getting the mixes back of the last song that's going to be on my new record, which means pretty much mixing's all done. Things are moving ahead without any soul crushing yet.
Oh, well, that's what this podcast is here for. Yeah, when you sent me that title, I got all teary-eyed just reading the title. Like, what are we going to talk about?
This is so me.
Actually, I think we've got some real things here that I believe the artist community in general tends to struggle with and deal with. And we've got some ideas on, you know, if you're feeling maybe stuck in some of these places, we've got some ideas on how you can get out of them. So I think it's going to be good.
I'm glad you have the ways to get out of them, because I mostly just came up with the things that will crush your soul and then put in parentheses how to avoid them, assuming that we'd come up with those in our discussion.
Yeah, see, that's why we're on the podcast together, because you crush everyone's soul and I put it all back together.
Yeah, it's a good team.
Well, by the time everyone hears this, sad news, if you don't already have your DIY Musician Conference ticket, you missed out on the $129 price point. It is now $159, but still, even at that price, Chris, that is a bargain, because other conferences are 3, 4, 5, sometimes 10 times as much as that, and don't deliver as much value that you get at the DIY Musician Conference.
I know it. Sometimes I go to these things, I'm like, wow, people are paying $800 or $1,200 to be here.
Yes, and I have been working on finalizing some of the schedule. There are so many great sessions. I know we already did our conference preview, but I think some of the things we missed is like that we're going to have people there talking about beat making, someone there talking about how to do guitar looping in a live performance. And I know a lot of the people that attend tend to be a good portion. I wouldn't say a lot. A good portion of people like you that sometimes play with a band, sometimes play by themselves, and are trying to figure out how do I make this live performance by myself more engaging. So there's going to be sessions where you can see gear and kind of ask questions and see how that's all done. Of course, there's going to be great marketing stuff. People from Spotify are going to be there. People from YouTube are going to be there. So you need to be there is what I'm saying. So go get your tickets at DIYMusicianCon.com, August 16th through 18th. Chris and I will be there. We can hang out. We're going to do a live recording of the podcast, which is always fun.
It's going to be a blast. I got an Instagram message from someone last night saying, hey, I heard our previous episode of the podcast, which was a conference preview, and they bought their ticket. So, we've at least changed one life.
Smart person. We'll keep this brief because I know we had that preview. So if you haven't heard the preview episode, go check that out. We talk about it in detail. And I know people probably thought that's just a big commercial for the conference. It is, because we really believe in what we are doing there. We really spend a lot of time in discussion and vetting speakers to make sure it's actionable advice to help you move your career forward. And then you get maximum value out of it. So yeah. Be there, Austin, August 16th through 18th. And like I said, DIYMusicianCon.com, and you won't need a jacket. It'll be nice and warm. So we'll see you there in Austin. All right, Chris, are you ready?
Right. I'm ready. Let's crush some souls and then build them up again.
So is there any background story that you can give for how this topic came about?
Well, a whole lifetime. But no, you said, hey, let's do a podcast. What do you want to talk about? And I said, well, we've done a lot of really specific things. You know, we've talked about whatever Spotify playlists. We've talked about ABC specific things. I'm like, we haven't talked in general about just the psychology of being a musician over the course of a lifetime. And it comes with so many ups and downs. And, you know, I guess artists already start off fairly sensitive, and we're presenting something, you know, that makes us feel vulnerable because it's, you know, ideally something that feels personal and all this stuff. And so that comes with all these other risks too for your ego. And so that's what I was thinking about. We should talk about things that are the common, like, emotional or psychological hurdles for that we have to keep jumping over.
All right. Well, as we discuss, if you listening out there, something comes to mind, you want to weigh in, you can do so at our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. If you're identifying with this, or if you had some, you have some advice or anything, feel free. We want to hear your thoughts. We do have listener calls and feedback later in the show. All right. Well, let's just dive right on in.
All right.
These are in no particular order, right?
I didn't put them in any particular order.
Okay.
But actually, that being said, the first one I thought of as a very common one that probably everyone that makes music can relate to, which is that it can start to crush your soul when you feel like there's no momentum. You have no sense of growth or you know, things building in excitement. Like maybe you played a string of poorly attended shows and the band starts really doubting yourselves or whatever. Or there's, you know, people get busy and distracted and you've been doing it a while. And so the band members are lacking motivation and prioritizing other things. All that becomes this kind of bummer black hole. So that was the first thing. No sense of momentum.
Yeah, I think everybody faces that at some point. And yeah, it feels like maybe every couple of years you hit this with no matter what, whether it's a band, your personal stuff.
Yeah.
If you hear me talk about a music career, I've always said a music career has lots of ebb and flow. Even when back in Small Town Poets on our label days, our first album was doing amazing. You're looking at the future thinking and seeing how the market is like promoting different things and what's popular, what's not. And it's like you just know that there's going to be times where it feels like things are on the decline or kind of stagnant. And I think you need to prepare mentally for that. And then I think there's some action items you can put behind that to sort of help you feel like you're getting momentum rolling again. I have a couple.
Okay. I have a general thought, maybe.
Okay,
before you go specifically, which is that there's no rule that says you need to keep doing what you're doing in anything. So I feel like you can start seeing possibilities rather than just the bummer black hole of the lack of momentum if you just free yourself of assuming you need to continue on in the same way or that you need to approach your goals and music career the way you've been told you need to or whatever. Like if you've been playing a string of poorly attended shows, maybe stop playing shows for a little bit until you figure out how you can do it differently or build up your audience again. Or, you know, if you're really struggling to get band members motivated, find some other band members. Like that's not necessarily the first thing you need to turn to, but that's an option. Like you don't need to just chug along simply for chugging along.
Actually, that is an excellent point. I just had coffee with an artist last week, and she was pretty much in that exact same spot. She's a front person for a band, very strong performer, lots of talent, lots of potential. And she's been in this, you know, fronting this band that they play a lot of great gigs around Oregon. They're from Eugene, which is where University of Oregon is. So they play a lot of shows down there, but they play a lot of great shows all over Oregon. But it's to that point where, you know, some of the band guys are just like, no, I've got my day job and this is just more of a hobby. And she's like, this is my career. I'm going for it. And so we were talking about it and she kind of decided that she's going to put that on pause for a while and just go focus on the next thing. Not necessarily stop doing that band project, but recognizing that that's not it for her. That's not what the ultimate goal is. It's been an opportunity for her to get better as a performer, but it's time to see what's next in a positive way. Not a, this is all terrible, I'm moving on, but hey, this got me to this point, but I want to be over here. What are the next steps? And so she was actually saying she was going to, you know, go hang out in this other town and write songs all summer long, and where she's also fronting this other band that pays really well. And she was going to do that and really focus on building that catalog of original material that then she can go do something new with. So I thought, you know, that was a good, you know, self-assessment of what she wanted to do and where she was at, and that it was time for a change. And that's okay. Even though it felt like she was kind of in a rut, you can get out of it by making some simple changes. And it doesn't have to look a certain way.
Yeah, I wonder if there's some sort of correlation between there being a lack of motivation or a lack of, you know, no sense of this growth and momentum that I was talking about. I wonder if there's a correlation between that feeling and the end of a phase in which something's working. So like, okay, like in her case, it's like, okay, it's time to maybe shift project focus. If you're committed to being in a band with a bunch of people and you're just in this fallow period, well, switch to making some videos for 6 months, or switch to maybe it's time to go make a new record or whatever and stop touring. It's like, that could just be an indication that it's sort of the next season of your career and not necessarily the end of anything.
Yeah, some of it can be just internal excitement starts to wane as you've been playing like the album that you were super excited about that came out a year and a half ago is now not feeling as exciting. And it's not new to the fans anymore. So, I mean, the number one thing I put to get out of this feeling of no sense of momentum is release some new music, whether it's just a song, even a cover, a live track, put something out there that's new. It's amazing how that will add some energy to what you're doing.
I think also along those lines, developing new skills, like, okay, maybe it's time for you to stop projecting energy outward and, you know, not to plug the conference again, go to a conference or take a course or brush up on your production skills, or, you know, go back into a learning phase instead of a production phase.
No, that's good advice. I mean, recently I went to a marketing conference, and because that's my day job, we're marketers here at CD Baby, and I live it every day. And sometimes I can kind of feel like I'm in a rut, mainly because I haven't gone into that learning phase deep enough for a while. And then I went to this conference and I was exploding with ideas and had some new insights and new perspectives, and it really energized my work. So I think, you know, that happens with music as well.
It definitely happens with songwriting. Like, you know, you're in a songwriting phase and you get to the end of writing whatever, 5 or 12 songs or something, and then you're feeling like you're out of steam, and then you put on one record and suddenly it gives you a new idea and you're back to writing. It's like, yeah, shutting off the creation mode and going to a reception mode for information and inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah. Some other things. Let's see, what else did I put regarding that? If there's some things like, I think this is where you can look at what you've been doing. And like, you know, oftentimes we talk about as artists start broadcasting or messaging out about what they've been doing, and time passes, it starts to feel old and stale. Change things up. Ask your fans questions. I think there's some cool tools. Even if you're just feeling like a little bit of no momentum on social media, a lot of times you've probably just been doing the same thing over and over again. And I think there's some cool tools, especially on Instagram, that can make your interactions with fans more unique and fun, and actually learn something from them just by using some of the tools, like where you can ask people questions. People love weighing in on stuff. So oftentimes your lack of feeling momentum is because you're doing a lot of messaging out and not a lot of engagement of community, or listening back, or finding ways to learn from your artists or your fans. And so I think that's also something that, you know, when you're feeling lack of momentum, maybe it's just some switches up, you know, things you can switch up there that make it feel more fun again and engaging again. But ultimately, my number one thing is release more music.
Right. Well, and this might have been implied or even mentioned already, but I think just having an understanding, particularly if you're working with other people on a team, or like you're in a band together, just having the simple awareness that you're going to go through these periods will take some pressure off for it feeling catastrophic, and having the discussion of like, oh yeah, we're in that place where, you know, I keep going back to the live show thing where, man, our last 8 shows were kind of downers, and it's been a while since we had one of those amazing shows where you leave feeling like you're on top of the world. Well, if you play music long enough, you realize that there are those shows that kind of are so fulfilling that they float you for a while as you go through the more challenging stuff. So just reminding yourself and everyone you work with that that's a reality of kind of a long-term music approach rather than needing to make it right now.
Correct. All right, what's the next one you got?
Okay, the next one, your soul can be crushed if you have no success metrics, like you have very few CD sales or a tiny stream count on Spotify, or maybe you only have 100 followers on Facebook and 80 of them are your friends and coworkers and whatever, you know, basically numbers. You have numbers that look lame. And when the numbers look lame, you feel lame because you think the number is a reflection of your worth.
Hey, my success metric is just to get my coworkers to follow my music.
Yeah, right. That's an amazing hurdle to have overcome.
Yeah. I think that's the hardest.
Wow. 14% of my coworkers follow me. Success.
Mm-hmm. That's right. No, I think when you don't know what you're shooting for, you're never going to hit the target. Or even if you are hitting the target, you may not even know because you don't know what you're shooting for.
Right.
I think this is one of the things that definitely plagues artists. Usually when I'm talking to an artist and they're kind of lamenting, feeling stuck or in this spot, I'll kind of go down this road. Well, what are your goals? And you know that the keynote I've done multiple times, I always poke fun at the idea that I put a image of, you know, the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and like, that's our goal. We want to be famous. And while there's nothing inherently wrong with that, I may question the realities of your happiness in that state, but, but regardless, there's nothing wrong with wanting a goal to be like, I want people to love my music so much that, everyone around the world enjoys it. That's fine. But let's put some real, goals. And in order to have goals that are useful, you need to understand what a success metric looks like for that goal. And they can be big or it can be really small. And I think that really helps for me. Sometimes I'll just spend some time reflecting back, like especially when I'm kind of in this place going, well, what did we even accomplish this year? And I'll start listing out some small things. I'm like, you know what? That was a big deal. That thing, even though it didn't make our career, I specifically wanted to, like, for example, get our songs on more Spotify playlists. And I set aside some time and I made it happen. And I need to allow myself to enjoy that little success. And it improved our overall stream numbers. And it wasn't a huge life-changing thing, but that's something I set out to do and I did it. And I need to celebrate that. And I was measuring the results. So, I mean, if you don't know what you're trying to do, and what the result should be, you're going to feel stuck.
And I would even tell people to go a step further than that or a step back from that. And like, you know, you set the goal of driving up your stream count on Spotify. But what's behind that? Like understanding why you want to do that and what do you think that's going to do for you? Because I've been talking a lot about dry streams lately, which is the, you know, where you get a bunch of streams, but they're not real fans. They're just sort of passive listeners and it's not doing anything else for your career. And so, you know, I did this collaboration with Date Night and I feel like every time I talk about this, I'm sounding ungrateful. Like I was super psyched about collaborating with them, but my monthly listeners went from about an average of, I think like 1,000 people a month to for a while, it's been about 36,000 a month. And at some point it was 70,000 a month. So for me, like huge growth, but it did nothing for CD sales and it did nothing for email signups and all these things that I've actually come to see as way more meaningful metrics that actually prove that someone cares and is engaged in listening to my music and you know, these ways in which I can correspond with them by having them as a customer or a fan that's on my email list, all that stuff. So to even the quote success metric itself is you should be suspect, I think, of why you want to achieve it. That being said, I know it comes back to like, well, it looks cool. I look like more people liked me than they did a year ago. So
that's my ultimate success metric. What will make me look cool?
How can you look cool? And same thing for like, oh, I want to have whatever, 100,000 followers on Facebook or a million subscribers on YouTube. Well, the people that do, I mean, a lot of times it's because they're amazing and they've built it. And sometimes it's because they've bought traffic or, you know, fake likes. So even those things are sort of worthless when it comes to the things that are going to put food on the table for you.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of, okay, here's something I'm interested in, but what is the why? Like with the stream situation where I went and like was trying to target specific playlists and get placement. My ultimate goal was not just to get random streams from people that may or may not like the music. I was trying to, the more playlists you have using your music, the more chance you'll pop up on more curated or Spotify official playlists. And seeing that we had some success there a little bit, I was hoping that would help fuel that more. Did it fuel that more? No, but I was able to accomplish getting it on a lot more playlists that exposed it to people that I know would be into our music. So sometimes it's like you have to have several layers of a goal, but ultimately, if you don't know why you're doing something, I think, you know, people that have heard me talk have heard me mention that there was this time where I was getting together with some guys to write and record that had been in a band here in Portland together. And we really got together thinking we're going to record some music that we can pitch for film and TV. The band we were in together had some success there, and the lead singer, he had some success in another project he was a part of. And so we started writing some songs, and it came up, well, I guess we should, you know, put a set together and start doing shows. I'm like, why? That's not why we said we were doing this. if that's the case, we're just wasting our time. We're unfocused, and it's just going to feel like we're languishing again, because that's not what we said we wanted to do. Let's make sure we're doing what we want to do. Otherwise, let's just not waste our time.
Yeah. Well, I think ultimately, like, looking at your success metrics is about comparing. And so you're comparing yourself to everyone else and what you have or don't have relative to them. And it reminds me of last weekend, I set up a badminton. There's a point to this story. I set up a badminton net in my backyard, and I was playing with my daughter. She's six. She'd never played before. I don't think she ever connected with the birdie, the shuttlecock. Yeah. She was swinging and never hit it. And then last night we went out again, we were playing, and I think she hit it twice, and she probably missed like 100 times. And coordination at badminton is not her thing yet, but the only thing that matters, like, just because she only hit it twice and failed 100 times, does that mean she should stop? No, of course not. Like, the only thing that matters is, well, maybe tomorrow she'll hit it 3 times. Maybe the next day she'll hit it 5 times. And like, when you invest your time in any effort for music, let's say you want to build your email list. Well, it's not like you're going to put a subscribe widget or whatever on your website and suddenly have 1,000 new subscribers. Like, it's a small step you're going to take that might drive 1 or 2 extra subscriptions a week or a month or whatever, and slowly it builds. And then you can put your, you know, keep taking steps forward. That's all that matters, is how you grow over time, not how you grow compared to anyone else.
Yes, agreed. And I would break this down maybe into like 3 different areas that you need to, when you're talking about metrics and success metrics. There's the overall career success metrics, the stuff that people tend to look at, like stream counts and fan subscribes and those kind of things. Then I would say that there is the more internal, personal goals that might not be necessarily related directly to need of those things. It might be, hey, I want to write a song about this, or I want to write 10 songs this year, or I want to, you know, accomplish some things that just are meaningful to me that other people may not even care about. But to me, it feels like there's forward momentum. There's metrics around that. Then I would say there's also the hidden success metrics that, especially in this day and age, where if you're not looking into the data that is available for you, for your music at CD Baby, if you log into your account, there's tons of data And it's always surprising to me when I log in there and log into places like Next Big Sound, which is where you get the data for Pandora. And I see a lot of success that was invisible to me that I realized, wow, stuff's happening. And I just didn't know it was going on because I wasn't looking in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some of those things that are sort of hidden that you got to go do a little investigative work. And man, sometimes when I've come across that stuff, it gives me such a lift that it's like, you know, like when I logged into Pandora and found out that, you know, I've talked many times about that one a cappella song we do was getting so much traction. I'm like, wow, something we did is not only enjoyed, but it's actually moving quite nicely and has over a million Pandora streams alone. And you're like, wow, okay, I could have missed that, but now I feel pretty good and have some new energy to keep on going.
And you easily could have missed it for a few reasons. One is that that wasn't your like single, you know, it wasn't among the set of songs you were really paying attention to probably. And then also you probably were more focused on what's happening on Spotify or wherever else. And, you know, your eyes were elsewhere until you made a habit of checking the data.
Yeah. The world is bigger than Spotify, people. You need to look at everything. Some people don't even have Spotify.
I know.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
Okay, where were we at? Let's see, your soul can be very easily crushed by bad reviews, negative comments, trolling, heckling, you know, mean-spirited words.
Oh man, you threw in trolling and heckling, and I didn't go there mentally with my responses, so that changes.
Well, stay on bad reviews and negative comments then.
Bad reviews, yes. That's, yeah.
I guess, just negativity aimed at you and or your music.
Well, one, if it's happening at an awful high clip, you might want to do some self-assessment.
Meaning it's unanimously panned?
Well,
everyone
depending
hates
on
your
what
record.
That or going into the trolling area. Like if you're being trolled that hard, you know, there might be something that you're doing to contribute or feeding the trolls. But, you know, bad reviews, it's one of those things. I could get 100 just glowing reviews about an album or a new track. And that one person that says, this sounds like a washed up version of blah, blah, blah. And they gave a half-hearted effort. I want to hunt that person down. And it's one of those things where I'm people that know me know I'm very mellow. It's most people haven't ever seen me mad. That gets me mad.
That's the one that's going to stick with you.
Yeah.
Well, I think I've talked about this experience probably on the podcast before, but my first band that I had when I moved to Portland, Oregon, you know, we were young and naive and we made a record. We put it out. I thought it was brilliant. It was not. And kind of we got called out on it, like by the local press. And, you know, a few of the reviews were not like nasty. They were just kind of indifferent. But one of them, which was a very kind of important, influential, cool, hip magazine, I wouldn't even say they were nasty because in hindsight, they were totally right. But at the time, it felt like I felt so ashamed. And I said, I can't leave the house. Like everywhere I go is music related. Like I go to venues, I go to, you know, in Portland, everything. It's like, I was convinced I shouldn't leave the house for like a week. I was so ashamed. And finally, I got up the courage to go to this place, the White Eagle, which, you know, is a music venue, about a week after the review came out. And I was like, maybe no one will have seen it. Like, of course, my real assumption was that everyone in the entire city had read this review. And so I walk in the door and the first person I see is Nikki, who now works at CD Baby, but was just a friend at the time, who says, as soon as I walk in the door, oh man, I'm so sorry about that review. Confirming that literally everyone in the city had read it.
You should have stayed in hiding.
And I should have stayed in hiding. And I, my soul was already crushed, but then that just pulverized it.
Well, here's some advice I would give folks about these types of things. One, I always feel better, or I can deal with a bad review if it's somebody that I feel has done their homework. I respect their writing. I think is a true music journalist. That's something where like, okay, you know, we're not their favorite. That's all right. But, you know, it kind of bums me out. But, you know, I respect this person's opinion. I can deal with that some. What I think angers me more is when people that really don't know music just are taking cheap shots at bands because, you know, some blog gave them $10 to do an album review. And they don't know what they're talking about. You know, those are the ones that irritate me. It feels like they're just flaming bands for no reason, just to be dramatic online. Those irritate me. But, you know, if I feel like the person really knows music, it's like, man, that bums me out, but I'm going to think about it and maybe they're right. Maybe they're not. But so, you know, one, you can't let it get you down too much. I know for artists, we really do. It is helpful to have a nice press nugget, somebody saying something nice about your music that you can use to help get gigs and sort of a press kit type of thing. But even if you do get a bad review, you can still have fun with it. I thought you could turn it into a funny post where you're kind of just making lighthearted jabs at yourself. You could make it into a t-shirt.
That's a brilliant idea.
You can almost use it like a marching orders for your real fans, because it's almost like they disagree with it so much that you make a shirt or something that kind of pokes fun of it in an interesting way. Or, you know, you can have fun with it. You can or you can hire a hitman. You know, that's always an option as well.
Well, if the negativity is not unanimous, like the situation you painted at the beginning of this segment, then really it just comes back to reminding yourself that not everything you do is going to be for everyone. And you know, the example I always say is like, if Taylor Swift has sold out a mega stadium in whatever X city, like there's three or four people who stayed home who hate her and 10 or 20 people who stayed home who don't care and would rather be doing anything else. So, she's clearly not a failure. So you just have to remind yourself that your music's not going to be for everyone, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think the big bummer in this area, and this happened to us on our last album, there was an outlet that in our genre is like one of the main press outlets where they review albums and feature artists. And I know that the person who runs that site is a massive fan of ours. They've been very kind with some of the coverage they've given us. Just, you know, because they like our music without having to buy ads or anything like that. And they've got that person who owns the site and then a secondary writer. The secondary writer likes us, is familiar with our past, but not as much. And so the guy that was not as big of a fan was the one that got assigned the writing gig for our album. And it's like, oh man, some of the things he said, I was like, you just don't like our music. You don't like what we do in general. It's not us. It's just, you just don't like this style of music as much as the guy who normally writes about us. And that was what the bummer was, like, oh man, I could tell by reading this, you just don't like this kind of rock music.
Yeah. Well, and if we're talking about press in particular, I guess the silver lining or whatever you'd say is that it matters less these days. I don't think people are so into algorithmic playlists and so into social media and stuff that I don't think anyone, I mean, I know people are still opening up the arts weeklies and stuff and reading reviews, but like, it doesn't matter like it did in whatever, 2004 or something like that. Like, so you could almost bypass any attempt to get press and still reach a new audience and have other ways to impress them. So yeah, a negative review certainly isn't gonna, you know, hurt too bad long-term. Comments on, like, if it's a negative comment on a YouTube video or Facebook post or something, like, I don't know. I mean, I always feel like as long as they're not like criminally insane, like just leave it and show that you're strong enough to just let it roll off your back and you don't really care. Like, you're kind of above even responding.
Yeah. You know what? I think that typically we immediately get defensive. But you may have noticed this, Chris, but people can be unusually cruel on the internet and say things that they would never say to a human being standing in the room with them. Not because they're, you know, scared and they're just super passive aggressive, even though the internet is the ultimate passive aggressive playground. But the idea that they don't recognize you as a real human being, it's just content.
Yeah. So they don't have to extend the benefit of the doubt or good faith or anything to you as a real person. You're just, you know, you're an abstract.
So I think oftentimes if you weigh in and say like, oh man, I'm bummed that you didn't like that. We worked really hard on it and here's what we were thinking and we were going in this direction. Sometimes you can make a super fan out of that initial negative comment just because they go, oh man, I'm so sorry. Now that I think about it, I actually liked it. I was just in a bad mood and being a jerk. So sometimes I've had that happen before and people, you know, it's like they get on the internet, they had a bad day and they just want to take it out on something and feel like they, you know, express some anger and it just happened to land in your direction.
Well, this brings up a question we ask ourselves all the time on this podcast. Like, I'm known to go on rants, but I have never, I don't think, someone probably can dig around and prove me wrong, but I don't think I've ever seen someone post something and then been negative to them about the thing they've created. Like no one shares a song on Facebook and is like, hey, check out my SoundCloud link. I love this new song I just made. It's really important to me and it's about my dad and blah, blah, blah. And giving the whole spiel. And then I'm like, it sucks. You suck. Give up. Like, why would you waste a single second of your precious time on earth doing that to anyone? Like, just move on. Maybe the song did suck. I don't like it. I don't need to tell the person.
Yeah.
I know we ask that question every four episodes, but
I vote with my indifference.
That's an excellent way to put it.
I don't have time or energy to burn people down on the web.
Facebook should
nor do I care to treat people that way.
Right. Well, Facebook should assess every post or piece of content on their platform that you have seen but not liked or engaged with, and then automatically apply it like a thumb sideways button from you by default.
Yeah, they need an emoji that's like a eh. Yeah, don't fixate. Ultimately, don't fixate on bad reviews and or negative comments. And the last thing I'll say is, in the past, we really focused on what the press was saying, but it's perfectly acceptable to use fan testimonials to help promote your music or help get that gig and such. So even if you're not getting a response from the press or they say things that are unkind, you know, real fans are better than some guy in an office or some gal in an office that is just moving through album reviews.
Cranking them out, right.
Yeah.
And lastly, I think I already said this too, but if it stings because it actually feels true, then change. You know, take the criticism to heart and get better. That's the last thing I'd say.
And speaking of that, one of the publications here in town gave one of my bands some negative marks because our guitars were too tuned. So from now on, I stopped tuning my guitar. So
it's amazing.
Deal with it, people.
So amazing. So Portland.
I wish I had had a picture of my face when I read that because that just blew my mind. I'm like,
that's
all right.
So I have a question for you now that I haven't lived in Portland, Oregon in a while. Is that still Portland? Because that was definitely Portland when I lived there. No, people have learned how to tune their instruments or they're just all playing synths. So it doesn't matter.
Well, I don't. Yeah, your laptop can't go out of tune. So that's what. I can't remember the last time I saw someone play a guitar. I'm kidding. Nope. Actually, the fact that people are using computers and more synth right now probably does merit tuning your guitars, because when it's kind of garage band sounding and everyone's kind of out of tune a little bit, that can have an interesting vibe. But when you start throwing in synths and program stuff, that just can sort of sound clashy.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to number four?
Yes.
Okay. Lack of budget. You have no money or funds or trust fund or donors or patrons or anything providing money for you to do cool things like record awesome music videos or to pay an engineer so you can make a really great sounding record or run ads on Facebook or whatever. You know, there's no shortage of things to spend money on in this world. And when money is tight, you feel like you're missing out on many opportunities or kind of skimping on quality and you're having to make do, which is also a bummer. Like, you don't want to spend a little bit of money making a song that's okay, but you spent the money, so you should put it out, and then you feel like you lose either way. So that's soul crushing. Lack of budget.
Yes. There was somebody I met who listens to this podcast. He was at the conference last year. His whole band goes and gives plasma daily or whatever.
Whatever you're legally allowed to do.
Whatever you're legally allowed to do. And that's how they were funding their whole album process.
Oh my gosh. I remember hearing that.
He rolled up his sleeve and showed me all the needle marks, and it was frightening.
I don't do well with needles.
I couldn't do that. I'd pass out every day, yeah, every time I see that.
Then they have to spend all their money on food and Gatorade to get back to normal.
Oh, they're young. But yes, that was a method that they chose, and they were actually it was more lucrative than I realized it could be, but not for me, not for everyone, but it was working for them. So sometimes you just need to get creative and know that plasma donation is always an option.
Brought to you by plasma. Yes.
You know, this is one of those things where it is a challenge. I think we went through this era where everyone thought fan funding campaigns was going to solve this problem. And I think that era has come and gone. And I'm meeting less and less people that are actually interested in doing that. And obviously, we've seen some troubles with some platforms, fan funded platforms, not paying and falling apart completely. It is a tough road to lean into that. It can work amazingly well for an artist, but it really is something that you got to assess your fan community and see if they're willing to support in that way. But everyone that I've seen doing like fan funding campaigns to solve this budget problem, everyone I've been seeing as of late seems to be having a harder time getting them completed. In fact, somebody I know here in Portland that I thought, oh man, she'll no problem get this goal. It was a reasonable goal. She'll hit that goal in no time flat. She's got a big network here in Portland. Didn't make it. Had to relaunch the campaign at a lower budget. I was shocked.
Wow.
I think you're thinking about budget. You know, don't just go to that fan-funded lever, because I think a lot of people did in the past and came up empty and frustrated and having done a lot of work. And if you don't reach your goal, you had all those fans that did convert, that suddenly you no longer have that conversion. So that's something to consider. But, you know, I think there is ways to get creative. I thought, you know, one, how often do we just not ask our friends if they can help us out? And I'm not talking about like a random acquaintance, but I'm talking about like a real friend that's like, hey, can we swap? Like, you do some mix this song for me and I can provide this service for you. I think a lot of times we don't realize we have things we can offer people that they have needs and you've got a need. And why don't you do a service swap or something like that? There's services like Fiverr online that sometimes can provide some things at an affordable rate that you might not have thought of before. Even just asking some bands, like, you know, depending on what the need is and where you're feeling stuck because you don't have money to get over it, there may be some options.
Yeah, well, and I bet the people listening to this podcast are already kind of motivated in a way where they have other skills. Maybe they're good at marketing. Maybe they're good at graphic design. So that is a great suggestion. Think about the skills you have outside of music. I think just in terms of not being as bummed that your funds are limited, you can remember, like I said earlier, that PR is less important. So, you know, that was something that well, still does cost quite a bit of money, but it's, yeah, less necessary now. So you could, you know, do without that. Something like running social ads, like while it's good to start with a decent budget so you can test things and, you know, you could do the whole dollar a day thing. And just if you're committed to doing it kind of long term, then the ads will slowly optimize in theory, you know. So these aren't all things where you need to have $1,000 right now. They're even like recording an album. Like if you're feeling that lack of motivation, like we mentioned at the beginning, well, forget the album for now. Just finish that one song. And once you do, that's going to, you know, save you on budget and I'll create that excitement and energy within the band. There's just so many things like that. Even like video production, I have to say that when a video looks really, really polished and expensive, I'm usually really bored by it. And I think like, I don't know if you have the same reaction, but when really polished videos show up in my feed on Facebook or whatever, I pretty much tune them out. So maybe you don't need the polished video. Maybe you could shoot something on your iPhone that's way cooler and feels more interesting.
The thing with video, I agree. There's a particular polished look that feels like people are trying to mimic the era of MTV or the post-MTV world where people were still doing really big production official music videos. I agree. Most of them feel boring and soulless and a lot of times repetitive. There's these expensive shots that they've paid a lot of money to get, but they're not interesting to watch. Like, it doesn't grab me on a social level. Like, if I was watching MTV back in the day and that was what I had to engage with, then sure, the expensive video looks great. But I don't know. I think there's lots of things you can do. One, look at where you're spending money that you don't need to be spending money, like Starbucks. Would you rather have that latte or would you rather have a new song to distribute?
Both.
Both.
I don't want to have to make that choice.
I cannot sacrifice. Dang it. I'm a musician. Haven't I sacrificed enough? But then also, where are some things where you're just like overthinking it and thinking things have to be more expensive than they are? The other thing is, especially like for video production stuff, go to your local college. A lot of them have art students that need projects. A lot of them are very talented individuals and they just need to do work and they have access to great equipment. They need interesting projects. Go there, find out if there's somebody that would be willing to shoot a music video for, you know, you'll be an active participant in their project. A lot of times they'll be more than happy to do it. So there's things you just got to think outside the box and look at options, because I think, you know, a lot of times we get stuck on this one because money does feel like I either have it or I don't. But there's options to keep things moving forward and build momentum and, you know, get something moving.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely in the past, this is not a suggestion. I'm suggesting you not do this. But in the past, I have funded records on a credit card and then paid it off as, you know, CD sales. Once I had the product, I could sell it and you know, kind of slowly pay off the credit. But like that ended up, well, I guess on the one hand, I shouldn't say don't do it because it afforded me the chance to make the record. But it ended up causing a lot of stress time and time and time again to like need to dip into money I didn't have in order to make my art. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the last one because we've got calls and emails and some good stuff that we need to talk about. So what's the last one here?
The next one is, you have no connections. Either you're not hip and cool enough to know the right people, or maybe you're really shy so you're not good at being outgoing and going to the places where you meet people and having those strange, awkward conversations where you, you know, need to introduce yourself to someone that books a club or whatever, manages a band. Or maybe there's just no one around you in a physical sense to meet. You live in like the middle of nowhere in North Dakota. Sorry, North Dakota. Maybe you have a super hip music scene. But you live in a place,
I'm sure they do,
that is far from other places, not a bunch of music going on, so almost zero music infrastructure. Yeah. So that can be a bit of a bummer as well when you feel like you're very far away from the center of things.
Well, yeah, there's a couple things here I'd recommend. One, if you're super, super shy, it is going to be more of a challenge. It is a relationship business. The music business is something where relationships definitely improve opportunities. I would say if you're thinking, man, I'm just not connected. One, start going to shows of artists or bands that you like, that feel like you would be a good fit with, and just go see their show. Afterwards, introduce yourself, follow up online afterwards, offer to take them to coffee or get them a beer just to pick their brain a little bit. People are usually more than happy to help out in that way. And then you start building a relationship. Sometimes it can feel like that was a lot of work for one relationship, but a lot of times that's what it takes.
Right.
The other thing is, if you are in a bigger city, there might be some industry meetups that you're just unaware of, or you can start one. Like, hey, I'm just trying to get together all the musicians or all the people pursuing music careers or music business professionals in this area. Let's meet up at a bar and start hanging out. That's another way people do that. And then something like our conference, that's been one of the things that I've an unexpected joy of our conference, to see people from all over the country and other parts of the world meet at our conference and then start Facebook groups. People have gone on tour together, just because going to a conference and hanging out with someone for 3 days straight, 3.5 days straight, it's almost like going to summer camp, and it's like your best friends after it's over, and then you want to keep in touch. And that's a great way where you're just like, you force yourself out of your comfort zone. There's no excuses. You're in the middle of all these people. Meet someone, you know, just go say, hey, I'm so-and-so, let's go grab some lunch. And that's, we've seen that happen over and over again, and it can be very effective.
Yeah. Well, one thing I was also thinking in this regard is that if you live in a place where there isn't a huge music scene, like so much of your music career and music making can be managed online. And I know we're, you know, as human beings at this point, our lives are sort of half online and half in the real world. So if you live in a place with not much music going on, it can be a bit of a bummer to look around and realize that sort of you don't have, what do you call it? There's not a lot of like really great bands around that motivate you or make you feel challenged or like set a high bar so you grow simply because of who's around you. But I think you can get that online, you know, as long as you just keep your head down, stay indoors all day and crank out YouTube videos. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to stay indoors to be an online musician.
The last thing I thought of is that oftentimes, if there are venues in your city, one, getting a job at a venue, even if it's just a part-time gig, working a few hours a week can be extremely helpful just to get connected with people in the local scene. But even on, there's some bigger shows that a lot of times look for volunteer crew, meaning you're going to get into the show for free, and they just need you to help out maybe with load in or load out or run merch or assist in some way. That can be a great way to meet people as well. And you get into shows free. So there's options. You just need to go look for them.
Indeed.
All right. Well, if you have some soul-crushing experiences that we did not tap into, feel free to share.
Yeah, there's more than 5 ways to have your soul crushed as a musician, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. The list goes on and on. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And speaking of that, we're going to start with an email. Hey guys, so I'm in a band, Zay Radcliffe Fanfare, with an interesting method of doing set lists. Thought I'd share. As a brass band, we are always asked to do different types of gigs, full shows, roving entertainment, many small shows throughout the day, etc. Always doing different set lists was long and kind of a pain. So we created blocks of 3 to 4 songs that go well together and practice them as blocks. Then when doing a set list, we only arrange these blocks together, really speeding up the process. We're having some speeches and talks inside the blocks that can go anywhere in a set. And between the blocks, we do extra talking that is relevant to the position in the set or the event that we are part of. Anyway, thanks for the good show as always, and keep up the good work. And this is from, Etienne, I believe is how it's pronounced. We've had an email from them on the show before, but I thought that was a good idea.
I love that idea. That's great. I wonder if you have those, the kind of flexibility of moving around those blocks and maybe you look at the set real quick as you're piecing it together and you're like, okay, those blocks need just one more song in between them to make it flow or something. It seems like a great way to just quickly make your sets and then make some small adjustments here and there, as opposed to starting from scratch every time.
Yeah. Like I know that these four songs are always great together, and depending on the size of the set or the situation, I know that when I put those songs in, they're going to be grouped together. So yeah, it can simplify it and move things around a lot better. So I thought that was a great idea and great feedback after that set list episode of the podcast. All right, let's go on to the next email. Podcasters, I'm listening to your podcast on band names and now you've got me guessing. Can you grade mine? I compose circus music and I'm a one-man band. My musician name is Samson, and then it says Y and then Hiss. But there's a period before the Y that I know he put there purposefully because it's in his signature. So I'm not sure if I'm saying the name the way it's intended to be. So full disclosure, my real name is Sam and I like clowns. Thanks. Sounds like a confession.
I think he's probably making sure he gets that in because we're terrified of clowns.
So in the signature, it's Samson, period, the letter Y, and then Hiss. I went to his website, you will see video of him with all sorts of instruments strapped to himself on a unicycle. So honestly, my struggle with this name is I look at it and I don't know how I'm supposed to say it, because the period before the Y is not standard punctuation for a name. So that makes me feel like it's important, or it's supposed to influence how I say the name in some way. If it's just Samson Y Hiss, then I get it. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, that aside, I don't mind. I like the name, I think. Like or even Samson Hiss. Samson Hiss sounds like an old 1800s name, which I don't know if circus music is related to like steampunk Victorian stuff, but they seem kind of like they might be in the same realm. And then Samson Hiss sounds like that kind of name.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be curious to get a follow-up on the why. If it was just Samson Hiss, I'd be like, yeah, that's cool. I like it. But when reading it, the why there with that period in front of it, to me, makes it hard to understand what I'm supposed to do there. I haven't heard his name. So if I heard him, how he says it, it might have just been whatever. That was just an artistic choice. But that's my feedback. That's my honest feedback.
So he gets a B minus
with a note asking to explain the the period and the choice there.
Yeah, it could be an A, could be an F, but right now it's a B minus.
All right, here's a quick email weighing in on also the set list thing. They just launched right in. They didn't really say hi guys or anything. I'm also anti music stand iPad for lyrics. Like Chris, I just think it looks lame. It takes away from the feeling of a performer who looks like they know what they're doing. I was in a band, though, that used a mixer that allowed performers to control their personal monitor mix with an iPad, so it required an iPad on stage. I'd leave mine down by the pedal board, though. My singer always had his clipped to the mic stand, which, again, I thought looked silly, especially for a hard rock metal band. You can't swing a mic stand around if your iPad is going to fly off of it. As always, love the podcast. I recommend it to every musician I come in contact with. All the best, Cody. I responded to him and agreed that I said, does your lead singer really need to make that many monitor adjustments throughout the set that he has to have the iPad on the stand? And he responded, no, he doesn't.
Yeah, set it and forget it. Put it away.
You know, but the reason why I wanted to read this email is because it did bring up a good point that technology is being integrated into shows in ways that are more than just the set list. And so you might be running monitors from an iPad, and it's kind of a bummer that a lot of the companies that run that, you know, a lot of the digital boards have these options, and a lot of them had an iPhone version and an iPad version, and the iPhone version being for the people on stage so they could pull out their phone, pull up the app, mix their monitors, put it away in their pocket or somewhere else. A lot of them had discontinued the iPhone version and just focusing on the iPad version. And so, like at my church, we use iPads and I mix my own monitors on an iPad. So when he said that, I'm like, yeah, if you're a metal band and yeah, you got to be able to do the thing. And if it's like, oh, I don't want to break my iPad, that kind of is a distraction from, you know, your onstage persona.
Yeah.
But they are expensive. You don't want to break that iPad.
Yeah. So in church, you don't use the, what are they called? Avioms?
No, the world's gone beyond that now.
Okay.
It's all Wi-Fi. The boards all have Wi-Fi. So it sends, you just pull up the iPad. It has basically, you can control anything on the iPad that you control from back at the soundboard. You just bring up your mix, adjust it, and you're all good. And it's, you know, if it's wireless, it's all wireless.
Crazy.
It's a whole new world. You know how much time and frustration and anger that would have solved for me had this existed when we were touring nonstop?
Yeah, in the 90s.
Because you had to have a separate console on the side of the stage with a guy who, one, gave a crap about what he was doing. Oftentimes, they would leave the stage, like especially, you know, like at a big festival or even when we were on tour with people and we were the opening band, it'd be like suddenly they have to pee during our set. Or they set the monitors for us and then another band comes and sound checks. And you're like, well, that was all useless. It's not going to be back. Like they're writing it down where the knobs were. I'm like that's going to happen. But this, you can save mixes, you can recall them, and it's exactly what you had. And it's easy to adjust on the fly. You don't have to keep yelling over the whole band to try and get someone's attention. People today just don't know what they
have. Well, and I went the opposite direction. I stopped playing with bands mostly. It's just me and an acoustic guitar. So I need less than ever.
All right, let's jump to the call.
Hey, what's up, guys? My name is Matthew. Just listened to the band name podcast, and I feel like my band name is just teetering on being a bad band name, but I really like it. I love my band name. We're banned from Japan. But the reason why it's not great, because you got to explain that it's banned, like B-A-N-N-E-D, like you're not allowed. Banned from Japan. But I've always loved it. No, we're not banned from Japan. All right. See ya.
See, I like those calls that are quick and easy. I have some bad news for him.
Uh-oh.
No one is ever going to hear it the way he's hearing
right.
it.
Right. I didn't.
There's no way that anyone is not going to hear it as them saying they are a band from Japan and expect them to be Japanese citizens.
Yeah.
Or Japanese Americans or wherever they live. I don't know where he's from. But no one is going to hear it other than that.
Right.
And like he's already experienced, he always has to explain that. That's the core sign of a name that's not working.
Yeah, well, as soon as he clarified it, I was like, oh, okay, no one will get that. And then I started thinking of other ways to sort of say something like that. You know, that saying like, oh, we're big in Japan. So I was like, well, maybe they could be small in Japan or something like that. But I don't know what the significance of Japan is for them. But if it needs to be in there, maybe there's a different way you can convey the meaning.
That, you know, when people read it, it's fine. But when it's said, that it automatically just sounds like we're, you know, it could be banned from Australia or banned from Canada, you know, and people are going to think, oh, they're from Canada or they're from Australia, they're from Japan. That's how people are going to hear it. So to me, I get what he's going for, and I like the sentiment of like, maybe there's controversy around the band.
Right.
But
there's too many things where it has to be explained and people are thinking something different that is as cool as that idea is, like we've been thrown out of Japan and we can't go back. As cool as that idea is and rock and roll sounding, that's not how it's landing on people. And so,
it's unfortunate though, because as you were saying that, if we harken back to our branding boot camp and I just described their band without knowing anything, I would say they're probably like a Warp Tour kind of band, like maybe like pop punk or some kind of hard rock thing that has. So I like that the phrase really captures that attitude and vibe, assuming that's the right genre. But
yeah. Yeah. If they're a classical quartet, then that, there's something really wrong. No, but yes, I immediately thought like Warp Tour type band and like skater punk type music that, you know, has kind of an edge to it. And I get it. So I like it. I just think if you have to explain, no, not that band, this band, it's problematic. But you know, you can get over these problems. I would just say, if you feel like it's a hindrance about talking, if it's uncomfortable to talk about an artist because of their name, or as a fan, you feel like you have to explain what it is every time, that makes you not want to talk about them.
I mean, what about Exiled from Japan? Doesn't have quite the same like quick ring to it, but same meaning.
Yeah, it doesn't have that rhythm. Band from Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it may be that his, you know, the fans and that, the way they find out about it, it doesn't matter.
I'm going to Google band, like the not correct way, band from Japan, and see if his website comes up. Nope. Lots of bands from Japan.
Yeah. We forgot to add to the list five of our five things that can crush the souls of musicians. Number six. Ask the DIY Musician Podcast what they think about your band name. So, all right. Well, I hope that doesn't bum him out too much, but that would be my advice. Can all those challenges be overcome? Yes. Artists like the Bare Naked Ladies have nothing to do with what you might find if you search Bare Naked Ladies on the internet. And that probably, you know, especially when they came up with that name, probably didn't represent their music at all. But did they overcome it? Yes. Are you the next Bare Naked Ladies or other band that has overcome a challenging name? To be seen. All I can recommend artists is that you remove more roadblocks out of your way. All right, we got one last email. I feel like I'm making people sad. I don't like making people sad. Hey guys, first of all, I would like to thank you for all the awesome podcast episodes. I listen to them on them regularly during my morning commute to work. The wealth of knowledge really helped me and my other musician friends tremendously. I have a question about music royalty disbursements. I obtained a lease for several songs from Rocket Songs. And you, Chris, while I'm reading this, you might want to check out rocketsongs.com. I copied and pasted this royalty disbursement agreement below and put it in bold font and in quotations so you can easily distinguish what I'm referring to. I'm not going to read any of that portion because I can answer his questions without getting into that. My question for CD Baby is this. I am under the impression that CD Baby is paying the music publishing publishers directly once we put the music publisher's information in the dashboard. Is this true? If this is true, then how could I justify to Rocket Songs that the publishers have been paid directly by you so I don't have to double pay? I'm just trying to simplify things and not have an accounting nightmare. I know you might be asking right now, why not just write your own songs? Rocket Songs is a good source for us to find songs that we can call our own, especially because many of us in my group of musician friends are just singers and do not play instruments and are handicapped when it comes to writing and composing songs. Rocket Songs is also a good source to start releasing songs you can call your own while you are working on your originals. Hopefully I hear from you guys soon so I can put this concern to bed. Thank you and more power to you guys, Jeremy. So let me answer the first question about the royalties, and then we can get into Rocket Songs. First off,
in a streaming world, the streaming services are paying the publishers directly. So Spotify does pay the publishers directly. The one area where the publishers are not paid is for download purchases in the U.S. And I'm simplifying this some. There may be a few other territories where that exists. But by and large, it's mainly download purchases in the U.S. where you as the artist or label, because you're really, when you distribute music, you're acting as your own label, are responsible for paying the publisher. So that is something that you would need to make sure Rocket Songs is aware of. I'm assuming they are, but I don't know. This is the first time I'd heard of Rocket Songs. But basically, it looks like Rocket Songs is a site where you can go get songs that have not been released and record them and release them. Or songs that have been released by other artists, but they're just not known songs, like your traditional cover song is something that's probably more known. These are songs that you may actually be covering, but it's just a song that, you know, they have different levels of what you can do there. So when I saw the service, I'm like, that is interesting, an intriguing idea, sort of a song marketplace for independent artists. However, there are some things that I would be careful about in this scenario. They do have the option that you can get a song that is just completely yours as far as you have an exclusive right to it. That's probably the only thing I would do in this scenario, because they're providing tracks and I don't know what that sounds like and you're just singing over top of them. You could get yourself in a situation where you try to monetize your track on YouTube, but then everyone else that got that same track from Rocket Songs is doing the same thing and it puts it in conflict. And just some other ways that music is being identified through fingerprint, I'm curious to see if it throws a same fingerprint as other songs and causes conflict issues on other platforms. That was my only concern. I think it was an interesting, intriguing idea. Again, I don't know much about it, but I think that answers the questions.
I'm glad he asked, because I hadn't heard of it either. So now I just did a little research on Rocket Songs.
It seemed intriguing. It was one of those things when I saw, I'm like, okay, I could see the need here. Like if you are a very talented singer and you're developing your songwriting skills and there's some songs out there that, you know, a way for you to get some songs that you can record that aren't just covers, that seemed like an intriguing idea. I have not read the fine print and all of their contract, but that's something you got to do. But that it seemed intriguing. But my big concern was if you're using master recordings that multiple people might have, that could cause conflict issues. Yeah. So I hope that helps, Jeremy. I thought that was something interesting and I didn't know it existed. If you'd like to weigh in on a topic or ask a question, you can do so at 360-524-2209 or email us at cdbabypodcast.com or what? No. Or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And all that info is at the podcast website at cdbabypodcast.com. All right, Chris. Anything else for the good of the order?
Nope. Just thanks for listening. And how many more of these are we going to get to do before our conference? Two more?
At least two more. We've got our live podcast taping here at the CD Baby HQ in a couple weeks.
Right. If you're in,
I'm excited about
in Oregon or Washington, come hang out with us.
Yeah, we'll be emailing all our artist community in Oregon and Washington about that shortly. So be on the lookout for that. Hopefully we'll have some special CD Baby HQ t-shirts that we'll only give away at this event. So that's something that will be available, hopefully. So yeah, check that out. I'm very excited to do a live podcast from our headquarters because this place that we have now is nice. Last place was a bit of a dump.
And the place before that was even more of a dump.
That place, I think, has been condemned at this point.
Thanks to what our employees did there.
Yeah. They're still trying to scrape things off the walls and clean the floors. Don't forget, get your tickets to the conference, DIYMusicianCon.com, August 16th through 18th. You want to be there. It will be worth your while. And if not, if you're sad about actually attending, I'll give you a hug or something.
to console you. All right. That's going to do it. And 4th of July week in America is a big independence celebration, and it's always, I always reflect on how far we've come in music that week as well, and what independence means in all sorts of aspects of our lives.
Yes. I'll keep my political comments to myself. Let them be inferred. We've come a long way.
You can get those
with music.
You can go see Chris's political commentary on Twitter. All right. Well, we'll catch you guys next time. Take it easy.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.